your home for football all season long.
This is big boy football.
We are the Roar, part of the ESPN family.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the
welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Hite continues here on 105.5, 97.5 The Roar. It's the most wonderful time of the year unless you root for the Lions or the Packers. Crazy weekend in the NFL and a crazy NFL Sunday with a lot of teams being eliminated from contention, other teams close to punching their ticket, and more. That's where we're about to hop into. We'll also talk some more college football playoff, but a couple things first, and Paul to get to on the phone lines.
We're going
to
get to Paul here in just a moment. I do have to make an announcement that we do have a new offensive mind in the ACC. North Carolina has made a hire at offensive coordinator. Bobby Petrino, come on down to Chapel Hill. Goodness gracious. Bobby Petrino, the new offensive coordinator at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Very ethical coaching staff there in Chapel Hill, and we'll just we'll leave it at that.
But hey, you know, for the 33rd NFL team to go and get a storied NFL head coach to pair with another storied NFL head coach just makes sense.
Petrino can still dial it up, I'm not going to lie. Like, football-wise, I don't think that's a bad hire, but again, like, think about what you're doing. Think about what that signifies when you hire Bobby Petrino. Not my program.
No, but it's a great from a content standpoint. He averaged just under 33 points per game this season as the OC and interim head coach at Arkansas. Thankfully, they're not going to ask him to do anything with the defense, as horrible as Arkansas's defense was this year. But yeah, Bobby Petrino in his antics, hanging out in Chapel Hill with Chapel Bill and that nonsense going on. So if they ever decide to film this stuff and put it on TV, it'll make for great television. Just an absolute, when North Carolina continues to show how much of a joke they are as a football program, you continue to one-up yourself. Congratulations, Tar Heels. Have fun with this one.
Yeah, a couple texters getting in saying UNC is shameless.
How in the world is the wine and cheese crowd in Chapel Hill going to tolerate and socialize and hang out with Bobby Petrino?
I don't even get it.
Gross.
It doesn't seem like a culture fit, but it's...
Has there ever been a culture fit for Bobby Petrino?
Nothing's coming to I'm going to get myself in trouble if I say where I'm thinking. So let's get to Paul and Henry.
Yes, please. Let's
Paul, good to hear from you, Paul. How are we doing?
Just fine, guys. You know, it's probably not a bad hire, but my goodness, David, what you got to put up with. Maybe he'll ride his motorcycle out, on his way out.
Making a deal with the devil for sure.
The game. Yeah. Hey, at the end of the segment, y'all stole every bit of my thunder. But what I was going to talk about, it just chaps my behind. They hear these people talk about James Madison, Tulane getting blowed out. If I'm not mistaken, the only team that didn't get blowed out last year in the first round was Clemson. And then what you brought up, too, exactly what I was going to bring up, example, Clemson hammered Ohio State 30-0, beat Notre Dame 30-3. I don't care what you do, they're going to be blowouts. And I don't think there are 12 teams. When you pick these 12 teams, I don't think there are 12 teams that's capable of winning the national championship. I don't know how y'all feel about that. They're just a handful. And I just don't think you can pick 12 capable teams to win the national championship.
Yeah.
I don't care if you keep going. And it's going to get worse when you get up to 16 or 24 or whatever. But it just chaps my behind to hear this because there have been blowouts in the playoff ever since the playoffs have been around.
For sure.
I mean, you got to agree with that. And somebody said, well, you put Notre Dame in there, maybe they wouldn't have got blown out. Who knows? They've been blowed out. I think Alabama blew them out in the national championship game, I mean, they did make it to the championship. But it just chaps. I mean, that's all I heard all weekend. They shouldn't even be in there. Well, maybe some of these teams like Ohio State, and they got blowed out and all that. What do you say about them?
Yeah, appreciate you checking in, Paul.
Talking about Alabama shouldn't be in there, but Alabama did go and win, you know, which I still don't think. I think they're a fraud, but who knows. But anyway, guys, it right at the end, you just stole my thunder, but that's okay. At least somebody else is thinking like I did.
For sure. Appreciate you checking in, Paul, and hope you have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, have a good day, buddy. Y'all too. Yes.
To be honest, I don't really agree with Paul in that discourse there, because I think that you're just evaluating completely different eras of the sport when you're looking at like in the four-team college football playoff era, you're seeing blowouts because there's an immense lack of parity throughout college football. And like 2 to 4 teams every year are stockpiling the majority of talent, and they're too deep as a bunch of 5 stars and NFL caliber talent. And I think that you're just in a completely different ballgame and realm now where there's more parity than there's ever been. And yeah, you can say that there were 2 first-round blowouts last year, and Ohio State, who was the best team in the country, beating Tennessee by 25, and Penn State beating SMU by 28 at home in a game where they really only had 70 more total yards and Jennings just threw it away. But you also had Notre Dame and Indiana as a 10-point game. Clemson and Texas is a 14-point game, which is a 7-point game in the second quarter, or in the fourth quarter. And then you look at the next round, Texas beats Arizona State by 8 in double overtime. Penn State and Boise State, a 17-point game. That's probably the most competitive the group of five will ever be in the college football playoff. Notre Dame and Georgia, really competitive game that went down to the wire. Then in the semifinals.
Well, we don't know about what these, like, this playoff is going to yield in the next couple rounds. We haven't played it yet.
I agree, but I don't really agree at all with Paul's discourse, if you want me to be honest with you. And I think that going all the way back to, like, when Manti Te'o was playing in the national championship game with, like, the helmet, I don't see how that's productive discourse, if you want me to be honest. I think you're evaluating a completely different sport. You're evaluating a completely different landscape. And when you compare the 4-team to the 12-team, you have to look at the fact that there's just simply more parity and teams are more talented now. I think there's 6 teams in the field this year that can win the national championship realistically. I think every year of the 4-team college football playoff era, there was no more than 2 or maybe potentially 3 that could win the national championship. So I would push back a little bit against what Paul has to say, to be honest with you, because I do think also, like, objectively speaking, there's a massive talent gap between a James Madison and a Tulane and a Notre Dame and a Vanderbilt. And the spread in those games would be 15-plus on a neutral field and 20-plus like it was with Oregon on a home field. And that's indicative of what the talent gap looks like. So I think that the rule makers and the format deserve the majority of the blame. I also think that it would be ignorant to say you didn't just waste 2 playoff spots on Tulane and JMU. And that's just where I'm at on it. Not everybody has to agree with me, but I just felt like it was a waste of everybody's time. And that's kind of what I said in the pre-playoff process as well, is that we were wasting time by putting these teams in. So I think, again, it's nothing against those programs. You need a format change. And people also have to acknowledge that the 4-team playoff doesn't really matter. Like, the 4-team playoff doesn't matter anymore. That era of college football is gone. So using results from that era of college football where there's less parity and the deck was stacked towards certain teams and certain programs because they have NFL players that are coming off their bench while other teams don't have any NFL players employed with their program, that's just not how it is anymore. Kansas State's got NFL players. Tulane and James Madison, they've probably got a couple dudes that are going to the league, but it's different. Like, it's a different sport and it's a different evaluation process. So I don't really agree with Paul and his breakdown there. But again, some people probably do. Let's get Delvin in here on the phone line, 654-ROAR. Delvin, hope you had a good weekend. Delvin, you here?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry about that. Yeah. Man, you talking about Bobby Petrino going nothing like this crazy, and then the Michigan coaching search is crazy. Man, I don't know what's going on. I'll tell you, I think it's going to happen, guys. I think it's going to be Kyle Whittingham. I just got a feeling.
Ooh, I mean, that would definitely be interesting. I don't know what's going to break down with Whittingham and that whole fiasco. And we're getting some echo there from Delvin, so I'm going to put him on hold real quick and hope we can get him right. And we'll continue with Delvin's phone call here momentarily. Yeah, but back on, like, the 4-team, 12-team stuff, I don't think there's any point in comparing it. It's a completely different sport. The talent dispersion across the sport is significantly different now. We're going to bring Delvin back in on that note. Delvin, we better connected now.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had y'all on in the background. I'm sorry about that.
No, all good.
What I was saying was, this whole curtain stretch is crazy because I bet the Michigan officials was happy at 17-0 Friday night. They were like, man, we got our coach, man. Then they got 17-17. No, come on, turn the ball over, Alabama, do something. Then they got 24-17. Oh, dang it, man. Let's call Kellen Dillingham, see what he's doing. Then they find out the contract extension. Well, guys, this is restart, because we don't know what we're going to do now. Ken Dillingham signed his contract. Kellen DeBoer's not coming here. I don't even know, guys. I don't know who they're going to turn to next. It seems like Eli Drinkwitz, he just signed a contract extension, so it's crazy. What it, I don't know. Like I said, it could be Kyle Whittingham because he keeps saying he's not retiring. He's in the transfer portal. So that keeps telling me something, that he want to coach.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if Whittingham doesn't want to hang it up, I mean, I think there will definitely be a suitor for him and his services, but I still think there's a lot of unknown in the coaching carousel, Delvin, and I think that obviously Michigan's one of the most attractive jobs in all of college football, and how the dominoes fall there could impact other teams across the landscape of college football.
Yeah, they're saying Jeff Brohm is a candidate too, so it's crazy, man.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, that's the whole Brent Key thing. I don't think Brent Key's ever leaving. I think Brohm's more likely to leave Louisville than Brent Key is to leave Georgia Tech, to be honest with you.
Wow,
do you want to leave your alma mater is the big question?
Yeah, you really think he'll leave his alma mater, Jeff Brohm?
I don't know. Like, there's something different, and there's a different level of intimacy that's involved with coaching at the place that you graduated from, but I do think everybody has a dollar sign.
But with Brohm, it's kind of like with Clark Lee. It's where he grew up. It's where he went to high school. It's where he went to college. Like, he's the hometown kid. He's from Louisville. That's where I actually think Brent Key would be more obtainable than a Brohm is because, or like a Lee, is they've spent, like, most of their lives there. Their families were there before they were ever the head coach. Brent Key definitely played there, but he's also from the state of Alabama, has worked in the state of Alabama a lot when he was with the Tide. I think he's a little more obtainable, but I also think it would be shocking if either of them left their alma maters right now.
Yeah, it's just crazy, man. I thought the coaching culture would be done, man. We almost here in the new year. We Christmas and it's still going on, so it's crazy. And thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thank you, Delvin. And yeah, I think that's a big part of why Will Stein took the Kentucky job, too. He's a Kentucky native. He's a Kentucky boy. Like, there's just certain things about people and their background and their life and, like, their childhood that you can't go back and change. And you can't change, like, what the emotional draw and emotional pull is towards a place. And I think when you get people that are entrenched at those spots, it becomes really, really difficult to pry them out of that when they get back in that comfort level. And that's why I don't know if Brohm's ever going to leave. Like, I don't know if I would leave. Like, that's just, it's just different. So, it's interesting to see. Texter gets in and says, Dan Lanning was pissed after the game. JMU didn't just lay down. Yeah, let's talk about this before we take a break. We'll shift gears to some NFL and some hoops. Oregon 51, James Madison 34. And yeah, I mean, again, JMU, like, this is going to sound more negative towards JMU than anything, and people might get mad. This game wasn't competitive. Like, we can sit here and pretend like it was competitive, but it wasn't competitive. This was 48-13 with 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter, or in the third quarter, and Moore threw a terrible pick on the JMU 8. And yeah, after that, JMU put up some points on Oregon's twos and threes, and Dan Lanning did, like, the fake mad gimmick, and they're like, oh, we were silent in the locker room, and it felt like a loss. Good. Should feel like a loss. It was an embarrassing fourth quarter by your backups. Your backups have to play better. Like, that's your backups don't need to be giving up an 89 and a 99-yard touchdown drive in the garbage time of the game to make the margin look different than it actually was throughout the majority of the game. I mean, this was a complete drubbing and domination. It was 34-3 at one point when Moore threw his first pick, which, again, I thought was he made two bad decisions, and the rest of the night I thought he was perfect. But you can't afford those against a team like Texas Tech. 34-6 at halftime. Oregon extends it to 48-13 in plus territory in the late third quarter. And JMU stat padded a bunch of points towards the end to make it look closer than it really was. And the same to be said with yards. But, yeah, this was a joke. This was a joke. It was a joke of a matchup, and I turned the game off, so I can't sit here. I went back and watched the end just so I would know what I was talking about, but Oregon had pretty much their third-string defense in on those last two drives. And a bunch of kids, like, there are a couple kids that literally are in the portal right now that were playing on the last drive of that game that have entered the transfer portal since because they didn't get playing time all season. So respect to JMU and respect to them getting back in the game, but it just kind of is what it is. Texter gets in and says the backup things goes to your point about the parity of college football right now. Everyone's twos are bad. Correct, which is why it's I don't like the comparison to previous eras because everybody's depth is terrible because your depth is just going to go start somewhere else and make $800,000 to start somewhere else now. They're going to go play at Kansas State. They're going to go play at Utah. They're going to go play wherever they can play, who can pay them. So it just is what it is. But to be honest with you, I was glad that JMU gave Oregon a good second half to where Oregon could have a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth because winning 51-3 wouldn't have been productive for anybody from a motivational standpoint. And now Lanning can lose his mind on them in practice and call it unacceptable, and they can approach like with a chip on their shoulder headed into Texas Tech. So I think there's some positives to take away from this for Oregon for sure. And then again, getting DeCorian Moore back out there, even on limited snaps, is good to see him. Stewart was questionable, didn't end up suiting up and playing, in the same to be said against Bryant. But all indicators in Eugene is that they're going to be full-fledged, ready to go for the game against Texas Tech. And Dante Moore looked fantastic for the majority of this one, and Oregon looked really good. Any thoughts before we take a quick break, John?
No, I thought you summed it up there pretty well.
Yeah. Respect to JMU. I like Chesney. JMU's not going anywhere, I'll tell you that right now. This is going to be a blue blood of the Group of Five world. I think Billy Napier is going to do a really, really good job there, if you want me to be honest with you. I think they've got resources. I think they've got administration that's willing to pony up and spend, and that's been made evident thus far. And then, like, that defense, I know they got gashed, but, again, it's a little bit different of a level. That defense was the best in Group of Five this year. That was the best defense in Group of Five from start to finish this season. They put a bunch of people on their butt throughout the course of the year. I mean, you look at the point totals on JMU in the last couple weeks leading up to the playoff, 20, 23, 10, 20, and 10 before, and then 14 against Troy. They were only giving up 18 points a game, 17 points a game, something like that. You date back further in the season, 13 against Liberty, 10 against Georgia Southern, 7 against Georgia State, 14 against Louisiana. Like, this was a defense that was dominant throughout the majority of the season at that competition level. So I'm excited to see what Billy Napier can do there and bringing a little bit more offensive flavor to James Madison. And it'll also be good to see Chesney take his next step and move on to UCLA, because UCLA deserves to have a good football team, and I really like that program. All right, quick break here. Let's shift gears to NFL, because there's more chaos than I know what to do with what happened on the slate this weekend. John's Steelers have a chance to win and punch their ticket this upcoming week. My Eagles won and got in thanks to a backup quarterback injury and more breaks that were probably a little bit rigged and horrible officiating in Washington. More than willing to admit it when my team gets bailed. My team got really, really bailed this past Saturday. So we'll talk about that and more right after this.
Upstate Cycle in Greenville is celebrating 46 years in business. Looking for easier parking with 80 to 100 miles per gallon? Then check out our wide selection of scooters. With many styles, colors, and price ranges to choose from, we stand behind the quality of each scooter with a comprehensive warranty and dedicated service. With an assortment of accessories, a broad range of parts, we have you covered. Delivery is available. And don't forget to ask about our layaway plan. Call 864-232-7223 for more information.
The holidays are quickly approaching, and there is no better way to shop for Western and workwear fashion for men, women, and children than at Cherokee Outfitters in Gaffney. If you hurry in now, you can save 10% by just mentioning the Roar FM. This excludes firearms. We also carry hunting and fishing clothes, gear, and supplies. With brands like Carhartt, Ariat, Cinch, Wrangler, and many more, you can get everything you need in one stop. Visit today right off I-85 at exit 90 or 92, just down Peachoid Road.
Gilstrap Roofing's experienced team specializes in shingle and flat roofs for residential, commercial, and industrial customers. Their dedication to complete customer satisfaction is why a large portion of their business comes from repeat customers and referrals. If you need a full-service roofing contractor that has over 88 years of experience and takes pride in top customer satisfaction, Gilstrap Roofing has got you covered. Call for your free roofing estimate today at 269-1232 and online at gilstraproofing.com.
Hey, 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 it's the Queen of Clean here at Royal Flush Toilet Rentals. Give us a call at 864-238-8800. We've got your portable toilet rentals, hand wash stations, luxury restroom toilet trailers, septic tank services, and holding tanks. So whenever you need to speak with the Queen of Clean, call Royal Flush at 864-238-8800.
It's time to kick off the perfect tailgate and take your team to Ingles. Chips and guac made fresh in store every day. The best meat in town, packaged fresh every day. And smiling faces giving you their best every day. Let's be real, in the South, football season is our favorite season of the year. There's a lot to smile about, especially with deals like these. Ingles, low prices, love the savings.
Hey everybody, Quok here with a special announcement. As y'all know, I've been on the Wendy's team 4 years now, and I'm thrilled to announce a new addition to our roster, the Chicken Tender. Our new five-star recruit is bringing six bold new sauce additions with him, including Wendy's new signature sauce, Scorchin' Hot and Sweet Chili. When asked what the Wendy's fan base can expect from him, Mr. Tender said, quote, bigger, better, juicier. There's nothing like me in all of Anderson, Oconee, or Pickens County, end quote. So yeah. get your hands on some Wendy's chicken tenders. No further questions.
Hey, y'all. It's the Rocket Roger Clemens here. Spent a lot of time pitching heat. Years later, the pain in my joints remind me of those days, but I'm not looking to sit still, and I definitely am not interested in going under the knife. That's why I chose QC Kinetics.
Not just for elite retired athletes. QC Kinetics gives everyday folks joint pain relief using regenerative treatments that work with your body to help repair joint damage.
No surgery, no long recovery, whether it's your knees, hips, shoulders, or back. My friends at QC Kinetics will help you get moving again so you can get back to doing the things you love.
Meet face-to-face with a QC Kinetics medical professional on a free telemedicine video call today. Find out if you're a candidate.
I trusted QC Kinetics to help me feel like myself again, and I'm proud to recommend them to you.
Call QC Kinetics today and schedule your free consultation.
Call QC Kinetics, 864-766-8454. That's 864-766-8454. 864-766-8454.
Hello, Clemson family. I'm Jeff Scott, former assistant football coach for the Clemson Tigers. I partnered with fellow Clemson alum Eric Newton to create Newton Scott Signature Homes, a smarter approach to luxury living. We're thrilled to announce our newest project, a brand new neighborhood development right here in Clemson. Our new community at Heatherwood will feature over a dozen homes hallmarked by thoughtful design, quality craftsmanship, and a seamless build experience from concept to completion. Visit us at NewtonScottSignatureHomes.com to start your build and learn more about this exciting opportunity. Go Tigers!
No gift? No problem. With Target's last-minute gifts, the holidays are a breeze. You can score on the hottest toys, beauty must-haves, chocolatey stocking stuffers, and much more. And if you need it now, no worries. Swing by any Target store today and snag all the stocking stuffers and gifts for the most magical season yet. Step into the holidays, check off everything on your list, and save big on your last-minute gifts. Only at Target. Restrictions apply.
Live and local sports talk coming to you from the Upcountry Fiber Studios.
This is 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar.
Serving the five counties of the South Carolina Upstate, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
You're listening to Facts on Sports with Faxon and John. Now let's get back to the show.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports continues here on a Monday. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to join us here on 105.5-97.5 The Roar. Going to shift gears to some NFL talk after a crazy weekend in the world of the National Football League. I will start with the two-pack of games on Saturday, the 20th. My Eagles punched a ticket to the playoffs, 29-18 over the Washington Commanders. Unfortunately, Marcus Mariota got hurt in this game. The Commanders, I thought, were in control of the game at the time of the Mariota injury, and they were in control of the game for the majority of the first half. The Eagles had a fumble on the opening kickoff, a three and out to start things out, then missed two field goals on back-to-back drives to conclude the first half. Mariota got hurt, and the whole pendulum of the game kind of shifted after his injury, in my opinion, with Johnson coming in, who has been in the league literally my entire lifetime, it feels like, bouncing around from team to team, and has been pretty consistently terrible for all of those teams. But the Eagles were able to use that in the lack of a quarterback for the Commanders to pull away and get a pretty convincing 29-18 win. Second game in a row where I thought Jalen's played decent. Wasn't great by any means. Missed A.J. Brown for multiple touchdowns, but A.J. Brown still did grab nine balls for 95 yards, and the Eagles just keep plugging along, man. Offense isn't very good, but the defense continues to be elite. You're at the Bills next week. I don't think you're going to win that one, but then you're back at home against the Commanders, who now have another quarterback injury to conclude things. So I think 11-6 is realistic for this team and likely the three seed. So it'll be interesting to see how things pan out for the Eagles, but just not moved by anything I've seen this season. The offense isn't good enough, and the quarterback isn't good enough. Need to get Lane Johnson and Jalen Carter back this upcoming week. That could change your outlook, admittedly. And if you get a win against the Bills, I think that would be a big signifier that maybe this team hits their stride at the right time in the calendar. But there's not too much to take away from a win against the 4-11 Commanders with their third-string quarterback. And then on the Saturday night game, gosh almighty, I mean, the Bears are doing some level of voodoo magic. I don't really even know what to say about this, John. This was, number one, the quarterback got hurt for the Packers, which is obviously not a great thing. I did think Malik Willis played, like, very, very well in relief of Jordan Love, like, about as well as your backup quarterback can play. But the Bears go field goal with 3.5 minutes left, onside kick recovery, touchdown, as time essentially expires in regulation on fourth down, then Green Bay turns the ball over on downs in overtime, and Caleb Williams made the best throw of his career to DJ Moore, taking the top off for a long touchdown to end at 22-16. I think the Bears now have 8 of their 11 wins in which they've been trailing with 2 minutes or less in the fourth quarter, which is legitimately unfathomable, but this team just continues to find a way to win. So credit where it's due to Ben Johnson and his staff and his team for getting the job done on Saturday night in one of the most improbable wins at any level of football I've ever seen. This team had 3 points through three quarters, put up 13 in the last 2 minutes of regulation or whatever, including an onside kick, and then scored on the first drive of overtime on a miraculous throw. So great win for Chicago.
Moving on to Sunday's games, where we had the Bills narrowly escaping the Cleveland Browns 23-20. Had some eyes on this one. Was shocked at the Browns' lack of care, lack of traditional football decision making here in this one.
Yeah,
because they let it all hang out and almost pulled it off.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Shadur played elite football in the first half. The interception that he threw hit his player in the chest, and then I thought he was really rough in the second half. The interception he threw in the third quarter was 100% his fault. He did have a nice bounce-back touchdown drive. They went 14 plays, 67 yards in 8 minutes to make this 23-17. And then to be honest with you, like, Stefanski made some horrible decisions, and it was clear there was a little bit of tanking going on in this game, in my opinion, which, again, is not shocking, and I'm not going to act like I'm above that, because I literally watched Doug Peterson throw 4 games in a row down the stretch once season to ensure the Eagles got a top 10 pick. But yeah, I was more concerned with the decisions that McDermott was making. Like, there were a couple decisions that McDermott made where I was literally saying out loud at my laptop, what are we doing? Okay, here's the situation that had me scratching my head the most. It's 23-17. Not a math aficionado by any means, but if you kick a field goal, you make that a 2-score game. It's 4th and 4 from the Cleveland 33, which is like a 48 or a 49-yard field goal for an NFL kicker, which is ridiculously high rate. That's like almost automatic for these guys that are in the NFL. And McDermott went for it. Incomplete pass and didn't get it. So they come back the next drive. They go 3 plays, negative 12 yards, punt after Cleveland goes down and scores a field goal to make it a 3-point game. And then Cleveland turns the ball over on downs again. Then, you're in a situation at 4th and 1, and I think this one was a little bit more understandable, from the Cleveland 11 when you were up, I guess, 23-20, so you would be kicking a 1-score game to make it a 1-score game, even if you would force them to get a touchdown, but you went for it again on 4th down and you missed, and you didn't get it. And then Shadur Sanders took a terrible sack and had an intentional grounding, and again, the play calling, it felt like it was suspect, to say the least. So this was just a weird game. The Bears, the Bills rather narrowly escaped with the win over the Browns, but this gave every single indicator that the Browns were trying to lose, and they got help across the league for their draft pick, which we'll get to in this one. Chargers doubled up the Cowboys 34-17. Cowboys eliminated from playoff contention regardless. Nothing more to really say about that. Justin Herbert's playing great football right now. That feels like it's worth acknowledging, even with the broken head.
Say that part about the Cowboys again.
Eliminated from playoff contention. Eliminated. You can hit it again. Yeah, we'll give that again for... And it's crazy how the calls have calmed down. Have you noticed that from after they beat the Eagles in that 21-point comeback? And again, I took it on the chin and didn't panic because I don't think the Eagles are good, but I'm sure that the Cowboys are not good at 6-8-1.
Scott, you doing all right out there, my friend?
Yeah, they are. They're not a very good football team. I will say, though, like, I think Schottenheimer's done about just as good of a job as he can do. And I think the offense has been pretty good. Dak's been pretty good the majority of the year. You know, it was George
Pickens. Great offensive halftime adjustments by the Cowboys, let me tell you. They really turned things up in the second half offensively.
Well, you have to remember, this is where George Pickens feast. It was a 1 p.m. game that no one was watching after they had already been eliminated, so naturally he went 7 grabs for 130 yards and a touchdown. Would have been nice in the games that actually mattered, George. Would have been nice in the games that actually mattered. So I don't think that the Cowboys should pay him. I think that would be a catastrophic decision. I know we're aligned in that one, John. There's too much inconsistency. There's too many variables in that to pay George Pickens and feel confident in it if you are the Dallas Cowboys. The Titans got their third win of the season. Cam Ward played the best game of his career. I think Cam Ward's going to be good. I've said this multiple times.
He'll be fine.
They need a real coach, and they need like a real system and a real scheme. But 21-28, 228 yards and 2 touchdowns, and man, it is weird seeing the Chiefs like this. No Mahomes, and they are dead in the water, man.
It looks like Gardner Minshew also tore his ACL, so they will have to round out the season with their third-string quarterback.
I didn't even see that, if you want me to be completely honest with you. I did not even see that.
Things are falling apart awfully fast for the Kansas City Chiefs.
They were playing Chris Oladokun at quarterback from South Dakota State. the Steelers' 2022 seventh round pick, close to Mr. Irrelevant range, who looks like had never played in an NFL game prior to this. So,
that's correct, yes.
Wow. I didn't even, admittedly, I don't think anybody could blame me here. I didn't watch a minute of this one. I went back and watched like the Cam Ward cut-ups, and there's nothing else where don't just ban the Chiefs until Mahomes is back. I don't care. I don't care what's going on in Kansas City. Joe Burrow had a great game. Barrett Carter got his first NFL pick. Congratulations to Barrett. Bengals improved to 5-10. Dolphins fall to 6-9. 45-21 victory for the Bengals. Not too much here. Bengals just ruining their draft pick. You should be rooting for them the rest of the way, John, to get stuck in purgatory and not have a top 10 pick. The Saints continue to look good. Tyler Shuck continues to look very, very good. And again, like, he should, because he's 27 and he was in college for 8 years. But this is encouraging for the Saints. The Saints are getting better. I don't think people realize how good that this team has been for about a month now. We talked last week when they played the Panthers how this has been a top five DVOA defense for probably a month and a half now, approaching 2 months. You go all the way back to the Panthers game the first time. They've given up 7 points, 24 points, 21 points, 20 points, 20 points, and 6 points. Shuck is getting better and better. They've won four of their last six games, and they were riding a three-game win streak. Is this the best thing for the franchise? Probably not from a draft pick standpoint, but to be honest with you, I'd rather have a franchise quarterback than a premier draft pick, and that's what Tyler Shuck looks like right now.
It's looking like that was a great selection there at the beginning of the second round. No, right now, if the draft was held today, the Saints would pick 8th overall.
That's not too bad.
No, not for what was supposed to be a down and lost waste of a year. No, right now, your top 5 would be the Giants, the Raiders, the Browns, the Jets, and the Cardinals. Would be your top 5 of the draft.
Man, Tank Watch is going to be awesome down the stretch because there's a ton of teams jam-packed like sardines in there at the top. Also worth acknowledging, I think Chris Olave is a top 12 receiver in football. The issue is he's always hurt, but whenever he's on
healthy.
The field, yeah, whenever he's on the field, he's great. Please don't get concussed again, because this is usually where like we get the 4 straight great games from Olave and then somebody just like smacks him like a Ram truck out of nowhere. So we're going to pray that doesn't happen next week. But yeah, Shuck looks good. Saints have been really good as of late. Not much more there. J.J. McCarthy might have broke his hand. And Max Brosmer came in and got the job done. The Vikings improved to 7-8. And again, probably the worst thing that could have happened to their franchise was win a bunch of games after eliminated from playoff contention. But they do have a little bit, you know, of, I guess, reasons to feel better about themselves down the stretch here. Maybe you keep Justin Jefferson around for another year as a result of this and he doesn't ask out this offseason.
I don't think he does. I don't know how many teams out there can absorb the contract to the type of a quarterback situation he would want to go to. But I also think it certainly helps when you get to play the New York Football Giants, who are absolutely atrocious. And I don't think Jackson Dart did anything in yesterday's contest that would make you think that they are absolutely immune from drafting a quarterback number one overall.
Yeah, I know it's been like a hot topic as of late. Like, do you trade Dart? Do you take Mendoza if you go number one? I think the answer to that's probably yeah.
I would be leaning that way more so. Now I need to see who's the hire at head coach. I think that is a big deal, what they're going to do there. But yeah, no, I would start having those conversations because, like I said, it was a few years ago, but the Cardinals drafted Josh Rosen at 10 and realized after that we need to take Kyler Murray number one overall.
Yeah.
Because that was still, you haven't gotten like the playoff riches that you wanted from that. That is still the right move, as Josh Rosen is now pursuing a master's degree or maybe even a doctoral degree at this point. Like, his football is so done. So I would not be surprised if the Giants listen, if they go through their process and they think Mendoza's better, or whoever it may, Dante Moore, whoever it may be, and we're so far from that part of the process.
Yeah, we got summer shows for that.
Yeah, we've got so much of the spring to do all this about. Like, I would not be surprised if the Giants were to trade him or try to go get a King's ransom for the number one overall pick. It's a tough last couple of weeks here, but man, they're giving themselves opportunities to dig themselves out of it. I would just like to see the Giants actually fire the general manager, because you cannot keep that guy around any longer, especially after the Hard Knocks offseason one a year ago made him look like such an incompetent person at that job. Would not keep him around. I would like to take an early break here.
I was going to say,
because
we have
I
games.
Know the next couple of games on the sheet here. The Adams & Co. roofing text line is absolutely exploding about a couple of local teams. that I want to get to on the other side of the break.
Yes. Let's get these two out of the way before we get to like what I would deem a big four of games. Falcons are just ruining the Rams draft pick. LOL. Are we sure that Penix is better than Kirk Cousins? Because I'm not sure. 26-19 Falcons over Cardinals. Rise up, guys. And then the Texans scraped by the Raiders 23-21. They were due for a letdown spot. This league, you have to go out there and earn it every Sunday. The fact that they got the win, it counts the exact same. So good win for the Texans. On the other side of a quick break, I've been waiting since these games yesterday. The Panthers keep pounding and get a big win over the Bucks. The Jaguars look like the best team in the AFC right now. Duval County is up. Lawrence looks like an MVP candidate. They get a big win over the Denver Broncos. John Steelers get a big win and are now winning in. And then on Sunday Night Football, the Ravens have a complete meltdown catastrophe in the fourth quarter. We're going to break down the big four, if you will, of games. And I know the text line is going to keep exploding at 654-ROAR. If you want to get in on the phones on any of these teams with the Pounders, the Panthers keep pounding and the Jaguars in Duval County, we would love to hear from you at 654-ROAR. Faxon and John continue with more NFL breakdowns right after this.
Jeff Carey here from Sit and Sleep Upstate Furniture Galleries. The year-end clearance sale is here. You cannot miss this. We've got triple power sofas for just $14.95. All of our mattresses, including Stearns & Foster, Tempur-Pedic, and even adjustable bases are on sale right now. Plus, with 2 years no-interest financing, there's never been a better time. That's only at Sit and Sleep Upstate Furniture Galleries, Highway 123 Bypass and Easley, open Monday through Saturday.
Your parking lot is the very first thing people see when they visit your business. Is yours making the right impression? Upstate Stripes is here to help. Family owned and operated, we're rooted right here in the Upstate. Specialize in parking lot striping, restriping, handicap spaces, and custom symbols. A sharp, freshly painted lot improves safety, boosts curb appeal, and makes your business stand out. Call 864-376-6698 or request a quote today at upstatestripes.com.
Holiday shopping time is running out, so give a gift that actually gets used. Odyssey Vehicle Outfitters, home of Rhino Linings of Greenville, has gift certificates ready for the ladies and the men on your list. From spray-on bedliners and protective coatings to lift kits, wheels, lighting, racks, steps, and custom accessories. And they can upgrade their ride any way they want, whether they work hard, play hard, or hit the trails every weekend. This is the gift they'll remember long after the holidays are over. Don't wait. Grab holiday gift certificates now at odysseyvehicleoutfitters.com and wrap up something Rhino tough.
For Christmas, treat her to a special day of relaxation and rejuvenation at Lilia Day Spa, Anderson's best spa 13 years in a row. The Lilia Day Spa staff can restore her mind, body, and spirit in a relaxing and private environment. Select from the one-day or many holiday packages. Lilia Day Spa can create something special for her. A gift certificate is ideal for Christmas and shows her you care. 116 Benson Street, downtown Anderson. Lilia Day Spa, Anderson's premier spa 13 years in a row.
At Carolina Top Dressing, we specialize in professional leaf removal and top-notch turf repairs. Let us take care of your yard while you enjoy quality time with your family. Don't let your lawn's potential go to waste. Carolina Top Dressing is also your go-to solution for maintaining a healthy and vibrant lawn. With our specialized soil conditioning program, we ensure your grass stays nourished and healthy. Visit us now at carolinatopdressing.com for your free quote, and as always, go Tigers!
It's that time of year again, and you're trying to figure out what gifts to get your family. We know everyone is busy, and who wants to deal with all the Christmas traffic and shopping congestion? Elite Custom Golf Carts wants to make your life easy. Come and see us and get a gift the whole family will love. With free delivery in our custom sleighs and complete with a big red bow, you'll see the shine in your family's eyes when they see your Christmas surprise. Stop by one of our three locations in the Upstate and let our elves, friendly staff, help you find that perfect gift. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Hey Tiger fans, I'm Morgan Coleman, proud Clemson soccer alum and Upstate native. I may have hung up my cleats, but now spend my time assisting buyers and sellers in the Greenville, South Carolina area. My goal is to provide my clients peace of mind during one of the most important decisions of their life. It's important to have early conversations with a trusted realtor to help navigate the current market. If you are considering buying or selling, let's chat. Call me at 864-313-7639 or search Morgan Coleman Real Estate online to get started.
When you shop for the holidays with AMPM Farms Butchery and Market, you're supporting real folks who care about what ends up on your plate. AMPM Farms Butchery and Market brings together the best of the Carolinas with a farm-to-table spirit, offering fresh, restaurant-quality cuts you'll feel proud to serve. Around here, good food starts with good people. Raised right, prepared right, and shared with love. Good food, good neighbors, great holidays. AMPM Farms Butchery and Market, your local farm-to-table butcher.
It's bow time. Two Bojangles steak biscuits for $5 means two times the tender, two times the flavor, two times the country fried, change your life, need another bite goodness you crave. Order yours today. It's bow time.
The Upstate's home for Clemson men's and women's basketball. We are the Roar, where every day is game day.
Might be going to the Super Bowl the way things are trending. Facts and Childress, John Hite continuing here on Facts on Sports. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to hop in. And John, would you like to start with the craziest, wackiest ending I've seen in a while, where the ball was at one point pitched to Jared Goff running into the end zone, and there's OPI, and Chris Boswell is smoking a chip shot after he made a 60-yarder earlier in the game. Like, I don't even know how to process what happened, but somewhere Jaylen Warren is still running through the wide-open C-gap into the end zone in Detroit. Steelers 29, Lions 24 will start there. Lions season's essentially over, folks, and the Steelers are now win and in to the playoffs. Thoughts?
Beat Cleveland on Sunday and you're in, which is always a good time when you get to beat the Cleveland Browns, but necessarily if you take care of business on Sunday, you're in the playoffs. Don't even worry about those pesky Baltimore Ravens. I thought Arthur Smith was feeling himself yesterday.
Oh, he called such a great game.
My goodness, was he just in the bag calling this game. Jaylen Warren, have yourself a day, young fella. I thought the combination of he and Kenny Gainwell in the backfield were fantastic. Gainwell is playing way better than anybody in the city of Philadelphia ever thought he could.
I've never seen Bro act like this before. I'll tell you that right now. I did not realize that Kenny Gainwell had any of this in the bag, so I'm glad that at least you're reaping the rewards of our departure.
You know, I had no idea that Adam Thielen still had this in his bag, but yes, he does. DK Metcalf, we may not see him for a little while after some of his antics yesterday. But, you know, I thought it was a great football game down to the final play, literally to the final play of the game. I thought the officiating was done correctly. I thought that it was offensive pass interference by Amon-Ra St. Brown. I thought it was the right call from a pick play standpoint there at the end of that game. Now I understand how Alabama fans felt until they threw the flag. I don't like having a pick play done against me. It's not fun. It's much more fun when you are executing the said pick play. But it was a great football game. I thought the officials had the right read on it. Thought they had the right control on it. And it was the right call there at the end. And credit on those Pittsburgh defenders for stopping them right there at like the half-inch line and not letting that game get won by the Detroit Lions, because I didn't think there was a chance, the way that Detroit was driving the ball with the final minutes of that game, that there was a chance that Pittsburgh was going to win that.
A couple things on this one for me before we shift gears. 277 gets in with the exact thing I was going to say. It was the right call, but how they announced that at the end was a disaster. Why on earth did you
leave? Wait, Nance or the officiating crew?
The officiating crew. Why did the officiating crew say touchdown and then like just rip the... I mean, honestly, I don't like the Lions, so that was actually kind of funny. But that, like, I would have been so pissed if that was my team. So that, I thought that was a disaster. Also, if you would have told me before the game that the Steelers were going to outrush the Lions 230-15 on the ground, I would have laughed in your face and called you stupid and told you you don't know ball. But that's exactly what happened. I mean, what in the world? This is the worst the Lions run game has looked since when? Like, insert here? I don't know. I don't have the statistic. This has been like a dominant rushing attack throughout the course of the last couple of seasons. 15 yards on 12 carries. I mean, what? Shout out to the Pittsburgh defense. They showed up big. They were physical in the trenches. They really set the tone for this game throughout the course of it. I thought the defense played phenomenally well. I thought Kyle Duggar was great. I thought Cam Hayward had a big sack and a couple big-time plays and a couple big-time hits on Jared Goff. And again, like, anytime Jared Goff's throwing it 54 times and your backs have 12 carries designed, good, you're not winning the game.
Honestly, I was very impressed by the Pittsburgh pass rush to not have Herbig and TJ Watt out there for what you got out of rookie Jack Sawyer, and obviously Alex Highsmith's one of the better pass rushers in the league. I thought those guys were fantastic.
Yeah, they Pittsburgh's defense moved me in this game, and I was glad to see the Steelers get a win over the Lions. Lions now 8-7. I'm not sure what their playoff clinching scenarios look like, but at the Vikings and at the Bears, not sure I like their chances in either of those, if you want me to be honest with you. This team's kind of falling apart right before our eyes right now. And, you know, this is, I can hear Don Munson somewhere right now saying, this is why you take the points, Dan Gamble. All this stuff catches up to you at some point. And if they would have taken the points earlier in the game and got a field goal, then they could have kicked a field goal there to go win it at the end. Like, these decisions do find a way to come back and bite you in the butt consistently, and when you gamble on every fourth down and leave points on the board, you deserve to lose a couple times, and that's what's happened to this team this year.
Real quick, in terms of the playoffs for the Pittsburgh Steelers, yes, if they beat Cleveland on Sunday, they are winning, they are in, but also on Saturday night, if those Green Bay Packers can wipe the bad taste out of their mouth, show up and actually win a football game. If they beat the Ravens on Saturday night at Lambeau, the Steelers would win the AFC North before they take the field on Sunday.
Dang. So you could clench and kick your feet up before you and not have to do anything else. That would be the best feeling in the world.
That's correct. Yes, I would very much like that. Go Pack, go.
Go Pack, go. Go Pack, go. All right, shifting gears. Let's start with the Panthers. Keep pounding. Panthers 23, Buccaneers 20. The Panthers have a couple different clinching scenarios next week as well. They would have to beat the Seahawks, and the Buccaneers would have to lose to the Dolphins, and they clinch the division, and the Week 18 game becomes irrelevant. Or if both of those results don't go in their direction, then Week 18 is for the division, which is kind of what I predicted to happen this past weekend. The Panthers have gone WL, WL, WL the whole year at this point. I think they're going to lose. I don't really care if Tampa Bay wins or loses against Miami, because I think Carolina likely loses to Seattle, and then we're going to get a do or die winner take all game in Tampa Bay for the division. But yeah, I mean, you had to win this game to find a way to get into the playoff picture. That's exactly what Carolina did, and Bryce Young has now 12 game winning drives in the last three seasons, which is more than anybody else in football. He has 14 wins, 12 of which have come on game winning drives. In the last five games for Young now, 11 total touchdowns, 2 turnovers. I thought he was phenomenal. He made all the big throws when he needed to, and a very costly Baker Mayfield, Mike Evans miscommunication at the end, where it looked like Baker thought he was going to the left and Evans thought the ball was going to the right. Ransom, who had the terrible, terrible unsportsmanlike conduct penalty or unnecessary roughness rather last week that lost him the game, well, he's the one that wins him the game with the game sealing pick. Funny how that works in the National Football League sometimes, with a chance to like redeem yourself and make a big time play. But yeah, I mean, this Panthers team's resilient. They're gritty. And John, how about this stat? The Panthers are now 7-0 after a loss this season. Best record in the NFL coming off of a loss, which is insane. They've lost 7 games total. They have bounced back and won those games. So really good job from the Carolina Panthers of locking in and finding a way to win. And yeah, dating back to the Jets game, they've gone win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. Wonder what's coming next week for the Carolina Panthers. Any thoughts on this one as Baker and the Bucs continue to struggle through injuries?
Yeah, they are struggling through injuries. They are struggling mightily. That part is for certain. Shocking, because I think when healthy, this is leaps and bounds a better team than the Carolina Panthers, but they're not healthy, and so that doesn't matter. Bryce Young's just doing what he has to do to get by, doing what he needs to do to win football games. Been impressed by what he's doing, and especially when you did not really get anything of merit here from Rico Dowdle in this game.
Yeah. Run game never got going. Rico only 29 yards on the ground. Chuba only 27 yards on the ground. Funnily enough, your most explosive run was one run from Jimmy Horn on a jet sweep that you were able to get him involved with. I thought Bryce picked his spots with his legs very effectively. Teteroa McMillan continues to be a home run, slam dunk pick. 6 grabs, 73 yards, and a big touchdown. Jalen Coker, yes, I love you, Jalen Coker. Please stop playing Xavier Leggett. He's so terrible. But the more they play Coker, the better this passing attack becomes. And Bryce Young is just clutch. Like, there's certain players in this league that just undeniably have the big time trait to go make plays at the end of games. Bryce Young is one of those guys, and it's not something that you can teach. So a league leading 12th game winning drive in the last three seasons for Young, and that was in the midst of being benched for a season and also missing like a couple other games with injuries. So very impressive stuff there for the Panthers. Ton of Panthers text to get to. Seattle is clinched, so they may not play all their guys right. I would say wrong, because Seattle is still competing for the division. And the 49ers are on their trail. The Rams are on their trail. And they're going to have to win both games to like lock up that. They play the Niners in Week 18.
Because they have the chance for the number one overall seed in the
In the NFC,
right?
Yes.
So yeah, so they're definitely still playing.
They're playing their starters, and they're going to play to win. Unfortunately for Carolina, I would love the contrary, and I would love the Dolphins to do the Panthers a big-time favor. I just don't think that's going to happen. But yeah, they'll be playing their starters. And listen, I'm not going to rule the Panthers out. The Panthers, even in these losing efforts with Bryce Young in the fray, have been competitive, right? It's a 10-point loss to the Saints, 11-point loss to the Niners, and a 3-point loss to the Saints in their last three losses. So they've been right there. I think that the game will be close, especially at the bank, because Carolina's been great at home this year. But yeah, I mean, the Seahawks are a really good football team. You guys know that that's probably my Super Bowl pick if the season ended today. And they're really good. So that's a little bit different of a caliber of team. But then again, you've already beaten the Rams and you've already beaten the Packers, so you've proven that you can kick it with the big dogs at times. It'll be interesting to see, but I think the Seahawks probably get that one next week.
Can I give you Bryce Young's stat line since he was benched last season?
Yeah.
He's had 5,208 total yards, 42 touchdowns to 15 interceptions, a 91.3 passer rating, 10 game-winning drives, and has broken the franchise single-game passing yards record.
Yeah. I mean, he's been really good since that moment last year. You know, this is the first, and over the past five games now, again, 11 total touchdowns, two picks. He's 100 of 150, which is 67% completion percentage. Now 12 game-winning fourth quarter and OT drives in his career. He made big-time plays. He scrambled outside the pocket. We have less text than we've ever had saying that the QB is the problem in Carolina. Life is good right now. Go win the division. You want to be a big boy? You want to get that big-time extension? You want to prove you're the franchise guy? It is right there for you, and you need to win one game in Week 18 to go do it. It would obviously be nice to clench and kick your feet up, John, like we're alluding to, right, and get some help across the league and beat the Seahawks. But all things are trending and pointing towards a do-or-die game in Tampa Bay between Baker and Bryce and the team that cut Baker and Bryce trying to prove himself as the franchise guy, and that would be cinema down in Tampa Bay in two Sundays. So really looking forward to the potential of that. Speaking of guys who are proving themselves to be the franchise guy, Trevor Lawrence is worth the bang for the buck. I mean, this 34-20, get in Duval County. I know you guys have been blowing up the text line. Trevor, 23 for 326, 279 and three touchdowns through the air. He adds 20 more yards and rushes for a touchdown as well. Parker Washington, like, literally saved my life. That's how good this guy is right now for this team. It feels like the guy's actually always open. Him and Jacoby Myers have been the greatest, like, duo that I've seen Trevor have in his career. So much better than Brian Thomas, so much better than Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, all these guys they've tried with Trevor. Parker Washington and Trevor have this unbelievable connection that they've been able to cultivate, and it's paying big-time dividends. He goes 6 catches, a buck 45 and a touchdown with a big 63-yard catch at a crucial swing point in this game. They give Denver their first road loss, or home loss rather, of the season. And listen, in an AFC that we've talked about, there's 7 or 8 teams that look like they could be a part of this contention picture. You know who seems to be peaking at the perfect time down the stretch? The Jacksonville Jaguars in Duval County, who have now won 6 consecutive games. And John, they're doing it by lopsided margins too. That's another part of this. They smacked the Chargers. They got by the Cardinals by 3, but then they beat the Titans by 22. They beat the Colts by 17. They beat the Jets by 28. And they just went on the road to a team that had not lost at home all year, that led the AFC going into this game, and beat them by 2 touchdowns convincingly. What in the world is happening in Duval County right now? This team's unbelievably good, and it's without Travis Hunter, their number 2 overall pick. This is crazy, crazy,
and without
crazy.
Brian Thomas Jr. being a factor in the offense.
Yes.
Like the 1-2 in the passing game we would have said in the preseason, it would have to be Brian Thomas Jr. as a clear wide receiver 1 and Travis Hunter emerging as a two-way threat if they wanted to have a chance.
Yeah.
Those guys are both, I mean, I know Brian Thomas played in this game, but those two are essentially sitting on the couch in Jacksonville.
I think Brian Thomas Jr. is like the most likely number one trade target this offseason, because what they can do is they can go Travis on one side, Myers on another side, Washington in the slot, and then they can also interchange Hunter in the slot and Washington on the outside. And I think they really like that nucleus of 3. I think the odd man out here is Brian Thomas Jr., and I also think they could probably yield a nice little package to get him with some draft picks or maybe a player in a position of need in return. So I'm just going to tell you right now, on December 22nd, Brian Thomas Jr. is getting traded this offseason. I'll go ahead and make that prediction right now, because after such a good rookie year, John, he's been arguably one of the most disappointing players in all of football this season for Jacksonville, which is, again, crazy that they're having this much success without their guy that they spent a premier pick on in back-to-back years. They drafted a premier wide receiver in back-to-back years in Thomas Jr. and Hunter, and both of them are essentially giving you nothing, and you're getting it from Jacoby Myers and Parker Washington, and you're the best you've been since Blake Bortles was in town. This is an incredible story, and clearly with the local bias here in Clemson, a really, really easy team to root for. But I even see across the league, John, it feels like the pendulum is starting to shift on Trevor Lawrence with the national media, and people feel more inclined to support the guy now than ever. Are you noticing this too?
Starting to, but I still, there's a lot of media out there that doesn't take that logo very seriously, for good reason.
Yeah.
I mean, historically, this isn't exactly a proud franchise.
Yeah.
But now they need to start taking it more seriously.
Texter says, my in-laws are the most annoying Broncos fans on the planet. Thank you, T-Law, for an early Christmas gift, man. I'm sure he's happy to hear that for you and happy to provide a Christmas gift to you and the rest of Duval County. But yeah, I mean, the two-game stretch that Trevor Lawrence just went on is, this isn't hyperbolic, one of the best at the quarterback position in the history of the NFL. He just ripped off 10 combined touchdowns in two games where he had zero turnovers, won back-to-back games by an average margin of victory of 21 points per game. They're putting up like 41 points per game as a team in those two games combined. And I hope they can continue this down the stretch, because if this team gets two convincing wins to get to 13-4 and lock up the division, John, and they go into the playoffs on an eight-game win streak riding high with a bye, who wants to see the Jacksonville Jaguars right now in the AFC? I don't know if the answer is anybody. I think they're just as good as anybody in this league right now.
They're certainly playing like it. They are definitely playing like it. Now, this would be a team that very much, I think, could be in play for the number one overall seed in the playoffs, which is just wild to think.
Crazy to think, because they hit a roadblock at one point, and like the playoffs were in question after that loss to the Rams. Then they dumped it to the Texans, and I guess Trevor Lawrence just sat up in his chair and was like, all right, let me take over now. Quick break coming here on the program. We'll talk more NFL, shift gears to some college hoops, and catch up on some Clemson on the other side. Final hour of the show up next.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson, WAHT-AM 15.